We live in a time with constantly and rapidly expanding scientific knowledge. We know more about how the universe and the human body work, and when we heed that knowledge, we can live longer. So the life expectancy of Americans continued to grow through the second half of the 20th century. Then it stalled out a few years ago and has actually gone backwards. It's true. The average age at which we die is now slightly lower than it was a decade ago. The major losses appear to be happening in the middle of the lifespan. Let's hear from someone who spent a lot of time and attention on all this. Dr. Stephen Wolf is an MD and a Master of Public Health. He's at Virginia Commonwealth University School of Medicine and is the lead author of a recent article in the Journal of the American Medical Association tracking life expectancy from 1959 to 2017. Dr. Wolf, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure. Good morning.
So here it is, right on top of the JAMA article. U.S. life expectancy has not kept pace with that of other wealthy countries and is now decreasing. That is a bit of an unexpected turn of events, isn't it?
It's actually a pretty alarming turn of events. We spend more on healthcare than any other industrialized country, frankly, any other country. And for some time, our health outcomes have not kept up with the healthier lifestyle and life expectancy that we see in our peer countries.
So now, do I understand correctly that the major change is coming in the middle age ranges?
That's correct. We're seeing the kind of direction we want for children, where mortality rates have continued to fall, and also for older adults, where the trend is going in the right direction. It's in this middle group, age 25 to 64, where we're seeing an alarming reversal and increasing mortality.
All right, so for 57 years, we watched life expectancy walk slowly upward. Over that 57 years, was there any backsliding, or was it always a steady trend upward?
No, the backsliding actually began decades ago, so people in our field have been watching this for a while now. It was in the 1980s, actually, that the rate of increase in our life expectancy began to fall off relative to other countries. It was in 1998 that we had fallen below the OECD average, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, and 2011 we plateaued, and then for the last 3 years we've been falling. So this current reversal is a recent alarming culmination of a long-term process that's really been underway since the 80s.
Well, I noticed that in the research and in your statements since that time. So what laid the groundwork in the 80s for life expectancy to begin falling decades later?
Well, that's a very good question. And frankly, we need more research to lock down an explanation for it. But we have a lot of theories about it. The important influence on the trends that we're reporting has been drug overdoses. So the leading cause of this increase in working age mortality has been the problem of drug addiction, and probably that's been fueled by the opioid epidemic. But if you look a little more closely at that, you realize that epidemic really got its start in 1996 when the drug OxyContin was licensed and set off a chain of events that led to the opioid crisis we have now. 1996 was well after this decline began in the 80s. So we really have to think more about the history of our country and what was happening at that time that might explain the decline in health.
So it's certainly more than just, you're saying, the OxyContin and opioid epidemic.
Right. We've been tracking for some years that mortality rates for a wide range of conditions in the United States are higher than in other countries. And that includes chronic diseases, it includes deaths from injuries, from car accidents to homicides, and many other causes. Drug overdoses among them, but certainly not the only one. Our theory about why this all started in the 80s probably has something to do with the changes in life in America and in our economy in particular.
In the sense that we were really in the heart of deindustrialization at that point, and people's standards of living began to, if not fall, at least sort of hold steady?
Exactly. An important clue in our study is that we analyzed this data not only for the whole country, but for all 50 states. And that allowed us to locate which parts of the country were most deeply impacted. And it turns out that it was in the industrial Midwest, the Rust Belt, Central Appalachia, where some of the largest increases in mortality have occurred. And I call that a clue because you have to wonder, well, what in particular was special about those locations that this occurred? And those economic trends that you mentioned hit the manufacturing sector pretty hard. And that's the era when we started to see the auto plants closing and the steel mills closing and the coal mines closing and so forth, and people started losing their jobs. Communities that depended on those industries for their income began to suffer economically. And that set in motion this collapse of the middle class, the stagnant wages, widening income inequality. And we suspect exposure to those kinds of economic strains for this many years is taking its toll on our health.
Dr. Stephen Wolf is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange at the Virginia Commonwealth University School of Medicine. He's the lead author with Heidi Schoomaker of Life Expectancy and Mortality Rates in the United States, 1959 to 2017, published in the November 26th issue of the Journal of the American Medical Association. You can call. I see we have one coming in now at 800-838-3760 on the phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. Let me get some specific figures here, if I can, Dr. Wolf. So what was the peak of the American life expectancy? And after 2014, what has happened to that number?
Well, the peak was around 2014. The exact number, I don't have it off the top of my head. It was about 78 years. The actual size of the decrease in life expectancy, when your listeners look it up, is not that dramatic. What's dramatic is that it's decreasing. That's completely, we haven't seen a decrease like this since 100 years ago in the Spanish flu epidemic during World War I. And what it translates into is about 33,000 excess deaths that have occurred in the United States just between 2010 and 2017. To put that in perspective, it's the equivalent of a fully loaded Boeing 737 landing crashing three times a month. So, you know, a Boeing crashing every 10 days, basically. That's how many lives we've lost just because of this incremental increase in working age mortality.
Well, it's interesting the way it's worded here. Increasing cause-specific mortality ultimately produced an increase in all-cause mortality. So some of these cases like drug overdose deaths, you're saying, basically drove the entire mortality rate upward.
Yeah, it's a bit of a complicated point, but it's worth clarifying. So the death rates from certain causes, like drug overdoses and obesity and so forth, began increasing years ago, but also during those same years, we were making great advances in other areas. So we were getting control over HIV/AIDS, and death rates from that disease were decreasing. We were doing better in treating ischemic heart disease, you know, what causes heart attacks and so forth. The mortality from that was decreasing. Cars were getting safer, and motor vehicle mortality was decreasing. So those gains were offsetting these increases from other causes. But as those grew more numerous, as more and more people began dying of these troublesome causes of death, from opioids to obesity and many of the others, they eventually reached the point of eclipsing and overwhelming the progress we were making from health gains. So by the time we got to 2010, the scales tipped, and we started to see all-cause mortality increasing. But the process was underway years earlier.
Okay, I want to make sure we don't over-identify one cause. Is drug overdoses the number one reason here, or are there others?
It actually is, but there are others. Famously, there's also been an increase in deaths from alcoholism and suicides, and I say famously because though that triad of drugs, alcohol, and suicides led to a term called deaths of despair for some years now, where researchers were labeling this as a phenomenon of despair. We do think that's an important piece of it. Obviously, deaths from suicide clearly represent people who've reached a level of hopelessness in their lives. But we actually documented increases in 35 causes of death, and they range across all kinds of organ systems and other causes that clearly require an explanation beyond despair alone.
We listener dropped off a question, didn't stay on the line, but wanted to know how the lowering of smoking rates over the years affected mortality rates over that same time.
Well, that's a great question, and that's actually one of the reasons for the health gains I mentioned, such as the decrease in death rates from ischemic heart disease. We made good progress with tobacco control in recent decades and have seen smoking rates decrease for a good part of the population, not as much as we still need. Tobacco use still remains the leading cause of death in the United States, despite all that progress. But the age group that would explain for this increase in mortality to be blamed on tobacco would only make sense for older Americans who were in that wave that experienced increasing smoking rates. Enough progress has been made in lowering smoking rates that it alone would not explain the increased mortality that we're seeing in younger age groups. I should emphasize that although this increase is occurring across an age span from 25 to 64, the largest relative increase is actually in young adults, 25 to 34, where the mortality rate is increased by 19%. So this is really impacting young people who are dying in the prime of their lives at an alarmingly increasing rate.
Was that 19% you said increase in mortality for that 25 to 34 group?
Yep.
Wow. That is a big number. We're learning a lot from Dr. Stephen Wolf here on the Jefferson Exchange at the Virginia Commonwealth University School of Medicine. He is the lead author of a recent publication about life expectancy and mortality rates in the United States, 1959 to 2017. Your thoughts, your questions, your comments, maybe some experiences in your own life with people you've lost at ages where you didn't expect to lose them. 800-838-3760. Join us with that discussion on the Jefferson Exchange, 800-838-3760. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. All right, so deaths of despair, we mentioned, kind of lumped together drug overdoses, deaths from alcohol and suicide. You mentioned some geographical correlation with the Rust Belt in Appalachia. I wanted to ask, within that, is there even a further geography element? Is there an urban versus rural split, for example?
Well, the rural areas have experienced a relatively larger increase than urban areas. When the research on this first started coming out a few years ago, that fact sort of threw off the media coverage, and a lot of the feature stories portrayed rural families in small communities being devastated by the opioid epidemic, and gave this phenomenon the face of a rural problem only. But our study shows that this is happening in our large cities, in our suburbs, and across all racial and ethnic groups. It's a sharper increase in the rural areas, but it's really affecting all geographic areas.
So you write in the report that you did a detailed analysis of cause-specific mortality trends for 1999 and after, but say that data were available for before that time. Tell us about that approach.
Well, we knew from prior work that we had done that this increase began in the 1990s, and analyzing the data for the period of 1999 through 2017 was a huge job. So we tried to concentrate our time and energy on trying to unpack what caused that increase, and we can go back for historical purposes and look at what was responsible for trends preceding the 1990s. But the urgent public health crisis right now made us feel like our first priority was to figure out, what's driving all these deaths right now. So that's why we focused during that time window.
Now, the numbers do go to socioeconomic status. So which income group are we talking about where the deaths increased the most? We have the age demographic. What about income?
Well, we saw larger relative increases in people with lower education. So, for example, adults with less than a high school education are experiencing the largest increase in this mortality rate. For many of these causes of death of concern, such as drug overdoses, women experienced a larger relative increase than men. Men have higher death rates than women for just about every cause. That's been the case for generations. But the relative increase in death rates was actually higher in women than in men. And all of that taken together, the geographic pattern where it's, in areas that have been hard hit by the economy, the impact on people with less education, the impact on women, all fit a narrative that we're talking about a phenomenon that's affecting people hardest hit by the economy.
All right. So this one sentence really shines a light. The increase in midlife mortality after 1999 was greatly influenced by the increase in fatal drug overdoses. So what is the number on that spike there? Do you have that in front of you?
I don't have it in front of me, but it's huge. It's something like 380%, if I'm remembering off the top of my head. The spike in deaths from drug overdoses is just stunning. And this really is fueled by the opioid epidemic. But I should emphasize opioids are not the only drug class that's contributing to this. And frankly, even if we were to wave a magic wand and get rid of the opioid problem, there's also, you know, the benzodiazepines, you know, the anti-anxiety drugs, stimulants, cocaine still becomes an issue, and methamphetamine and so forth that remain the problem. The troubling reflex we have in our society is to treat the symptoms and not step back and look at the root cause. So along with tackling the drug crisis, we have to ask what is going on in people's lives that they're experiencing so much pain, whether it's physical pain or psychic pain, that makes them susceptible to these drugs.
I think what I hear you saying is don't get hung up on the opioids, because the fact is that people are reaching for whatever drug happens to be close.
Exactly. And it's probably the chronic stress that people are living under. People cope with stress in different ways. Some try to self-medicate, some overeat, some act out violently. And we need to deal with all of those particular reactions and responses. But we have to also look at what is it about the life in America, in contrast to these other high-income countries, that is exposing so many families to this level of stress.
We have a few more things to talk about with Dr. Stephen Wolf here on the Jefferson Exchange at Virginia Commonwealth University School of Medicine, the lead author on a recent report in JAMA, the Journal of the American Medical Association, on life expectancy and mortality rates in the United States, 1959 to 2017. You can join our conversation on the exchange. A couple people waiting on the phones at 800-838-3760. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. You did mention at the top that we do spend more on healthcare than any other country. And also in the report, it says the United States has a longstanding health disadvantage relative to other high-income countries. What is that?
Well, the health disadvantage refers to the fact that across multiple health metrics, we do worse than other countries. And that's been the case for some years now. The fact that we overspend on health care relative to those other countries is a very valuable lesson. It reminds us that health care is only one piece of what drives our health. In fact, it's a relatively small piece. Research shows that only about 10 to 20% of our health outcomes are attributable to health care, and I'm a physician saying this. So we need to improve the quality of our health care system. We have to deal with inadequate access to care and problems with the quality of care, which are inferior in the United States compared to the health systems in other countries. Unlike popular belief for many in our public. But even if we, again, were to wave another magic wand and fix our healthcare system, that alone would not address this health disadvantage, because what really drives our lives is what environment we're living in, what conditions we face at home, which shape disease patterns long before people come through the doors of an emergency room or doctor's office.
Let's take a call here from Aaron in Humboldt County. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Dr. Stephen Wolf.
Which shaped disease patterns long before...
Whoops, somebody is listening to his radio, and that doesn't work because we are 10 seconds behind with the delay here. So as a public health matter, how do you recommend moving ahead? How do we address this, Dr. Wolf?
Well, we have to treat the symptoms downstream, for sure. So, you know, we have to deal with the opioid epidemic, and we have to provide stronger services for addiction. Obesity is a big contributor, so we continue to need to encourage people to eat a healthy diet, exercise regularly, and deal with all the other set of policies that are important in dealing with each of those 35 conditions that I mentioned. But as we talked about a few minutes ago, we have to also step back and ask ourselves what are the root cause issues. And the solutions to that take us out of what many people would typically think of as health policies, but actually are probably more important in solving this health problem. So, for example, the inability of people to get a good education, to enable them to get jobs that pay livable wages, that allow them to afford healthy foods, to live in healthy neighborhoods, for their children to thrive and to grow in terms of social mobility. Those policies that the middle class is so much in need for, and that these disadvantaged communities have been struggling for so many years due to disinvestment, would do far more to address this health problem than anything a doctor or public health department could do.
It's a quick call here from Warren in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. Warren,
good morning.
Go ahead.
I wonder if you could summarize real briefly the gender differences that he's found in the mortality rates, please.
All right.
Good question, and I touched on this a moment ago. We know that men die at higher rates than women, and as I said, this has historically always been the case. But the relative increase for deaths from, say, drug overdoses or suicide were higher among women than among men.
All right. You'd mentioned that we've done a lot in child mortality. We still have some issues with child mortality relative to the other industrialized countries, don't we?
That's a very good point. So, yes, we've made great progress in lowering death rates for infants and for children relative to where we were before, but we still have not kept up with the other countries in that area either. Infant mortality rates in the U.S. are higher than they are in other developed countries. And then you tack on the problems that we have with disparities. So the death rate for black infants has been twice that of white infants since John Kennedy's civil rights speech in the 1960s. That ratio has never changed. So if you're a parent expecting a black child, the risk of death before their first birthday is twice as high as it is for a white parent.
And what is the ethnic breakout before we go on the 32,000 excess deaths you say we're having now?
Well, in absolute numbers, the white Americans account for the majority of those deaths. However, as I mentioned, we are now seeing this trend impacting all racial groups. So we are seeing increases in African-American mortality, Hispanic mortality, and so forth. Increases in Native American mortality were starting in the 1990s. And this is very tragic, actually, because we were making some progress in lowering the exceptionally high death rates among blacks in America. The gap between blacks and whites was beginning to narrow. But because of this trend, it's reversed directions, and now the gap is widening again.
Oh, boy. Drug overdoses, alcoholic liver disease, and suicides as deaths of despair, a leading driver of the dropping of American life expectancy. Thanks so much to Dr. Stephen Wolfe at Virginia Commonwealth for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure.